It's Thursday. It's Lockdown in London. I'm Gab. He's Jules. And we just keep on keeping on, right?
Keep on keeping on.
We have quite the show, right? But Barcelona, super impressive.
Boy, they are back.
Man City in the final of the League Cup. But one place to start. Milan and Juve in Serie A. We're joined by Stuart Robson. Jules, this was a tremendous... This was a tremendous entertainment I saw.
I
despite both teams being really, really under strength. Seven players out for Milan, three for Juve. Robbo, I got to ask you this because you like your tactics. The fact that it was so end-to-end that both teams really went to it, Milan at 1-1 rather than sitting back and defending, saying, oh, we're going for the jugular, we're going to go for the win here. Did that take away from it, or did you enjoy it? Or did the tactician in you say, like, well, why don't they go and, like, tighten up? Or are you okay with it?
No, tactics work both ways. Tactics can be defensive tactics. They can be attacking tactics. And I really enjoyed the game because I thought there was different ways that they were trying to break the opposition down. There were some great individual battles between the left-back Teo Hernandez for Milan and Chiesa for Juventus. There was the spare player, Dallo, I don't think made the most of it. I mean, that was a big loss for Milan that they couldn't play Calabria there because he'd have been bombing down that right-hand side because Ramsey wanted to come infield. So there was lots of different areas where there was opportunities to attack. Çalhanoğlu doesn't come back too often, so he was always the spare player because Bentancur at times went forward as well. So I thought it was a great game, great entertainment. In the end, the right result as well.
I made the point that Federico Chiesa, Juve's big, big signing this summer. He really is the future of the club, and he needs to perform. And it was acrimonious because, as we know, when you move from Fiorentina to Juve, you become persona non grata forever in Tuscany, right? Just go ask.
We saw.
We've seen that many times. They really don't like Juve. this was his coming out party. I want to hear from both of you because we've seen glimpses of him at Juve, and we've seen a little bit of him at Fiorentina. But I thought he was absolutely phenomenal. Hit the woodwork, scored two goals. Mm. The first one, the little back heel from Dybala, pretty. Yeah. The second one, I thought, just technically, he seems off balance and he still gets so much power on the ball. He also, as I said, he hit the woodwork too. Is this it? Is he the value added? At some point, when you transition away from Cristiano, which at some point you're going to do, this is who you transition to, right, Jules?
Yeah, I think he was really good, of course, on that right-hand side. I think that formation suits him more than if you play with a back three and you put him as a right wing back, for example, or even in a 4-3-3 formation. I think, it's better to play him that way. But he was good. I thought he was helped by the fact that Theo Hernandez had a bad game defensively, certainly, and didn't close him down enough, was not aggressive enough in his defending against Chiesa and left him too much time on the ball. On both, well, on the second goal, especially on the first one, I think he's a bit late as well. But yeah, good and good to see that confidence from Chiesa.
Robbo, your thoughts on Chiesa?
He was brilliant, and he had to put up with a bit of pressure. I just go back to what Jules said there. The first two challenges that Teo Hernandez made, he got stuck into Chiesa. Chiesa went down fairly easy, screaming, and you thought maybe he didn't fancy the game. But that very first time he got the ball and went past Teo Hernandez, that meant Teo Hernandez couldn't get tight to him. And then he played the little one too. It wasn't good defending, but I thought he was outstanding. He showed that he could run down the side of Hernandez. He showed that when he played in field, he could go and join in. The second goal, the pass from Dybala, wasn't a particularly good one. It was smashed at him. It bounced just in front of him, but his first touch was excellent. And the finish was brilliant because I don't think anybody expected at that point. The game was going backwards and forwards, and it was just a great goal from a player that was on top of him. And the great thing was he was disappointed to be taken off, and I don't quite know why he was taken off just after scoring his second goal.
Cramps. Yeah, cramps. Let's hope it's not more serious than that.
One thing from Milan's perspective, obviously we talked about all the absentees. Just a very quick recap. They're missing Ibrahimovic and they're missing Rebic up front. They're missing Tonali, Benacer, and Krunic in midfield, which meant they literally had to invent a midfielder to play alongside Frank Kessie. They went with it. They went with Calabria, normally plays right back. And of course, at the back, they were also missing Gabbia, who was another option for them. Did you like the way Pioli approached the game? Because I think at 1-1, you wonder if maybe now we've given everything. let's take our foot off the gas. Maybe let's try to hit Juve on the break rather than keeping on attacking, since they know Juve have the individuals, right? That would be your criticism, right?
Yeah,
Jules?
No, it's just I was screaming at the TV. Just go defensive, but I love the fact that he kept the identity. They kept playing. They got done by a better team. I'm just wondered if I 1-1 with all the players missing, you just thought, okay, let's take a point here.
I think, Robbo, this is one of the seminal changes in Italian football that's happened. Mm. Not everybody, but like the idea that at 1-1 you figure, let's go for the knockout blow and knock Juve out of the title race or thereabouts. And maybe wouldn't have done it if Inter hadn't lost earlier in the day, because then they'd be playing catch up. But to do that rather than to go and defend the lead, I thought was a brave choice from Pioli. In the end, it didn't work. But football's richer because people make those choices, right?
Yeah, and what Pioli was doing from the side of the field, even when it was 1-0 and the game could go either way, he was demanding the defensive side of the game, but higher up the field. He was driving Castillejo on to go and close down quickly. He was demanding from his front players to go and press the ball. And that's the problem with that. Yes, you can win it back. And yes, they were doing really well, but you can be played around. And that's what Juventus did on several occasions. They played around that press. And Milan got more and more tired. And some of their midfield players just couldn't get backwards and forwards anymore. The front players, the wide players, Helga, Castillejo, couldn't defend anymore because they were absolutely shattered. And that's maybe when he should have made the changes, when it was 1-0, not just in his tactics, but in the personnel as well. I know he didn't have too many players to bring on, but he needed fresh legs.
He brought on Maldini. Come on, man. The other Maldini
would have been the player for me to bring on at right back, or bring on at centre half, and just get Calabria back to right back, and just put another midfield player on. That would have been the way. Kalulu, when I've seen him play this season, has been excellent.
Yeah, no, Kalulu maybe could have come on. Could have come on earlier. Yeah. I want to give a shout out to Pirlo on one level, because he did something which, again, textbook 101 old school Italian football thinking you would never do. This is a huge game. You have the better players. Your opponents are hit hard by injuries. You've got some key injuries too, and unavailables. You need a left back, and who does he play? He plays Frabotta. Now, for those who don't know, I think Frabotta actually made his debut in one of the last games last season. But this is a guy who I think most people hadn't heard of until 6 to 8 months ago. He's a homegrown player. He started the first game of the season, and when he saw it, wait, who's this guy? First game under Pirlo. I don't think anybody's going to suggest that Frabotta is a second coming of Marcelo. But with Cuadrado and Alexandro out, standard 101 Italian football manual, whether it's Allegri or Trapattoni or even Ancelotti would have been, okay, let's put Demiral in there, another center back. We've got three center backs, and I put Danilo on the flank. Danilo can do both phases. Demiral can adapt and play right back. Somebody can do that. We'll turn into a three when we attack, which we do anyway, and we're fine. Instead, he said, no, I'm going to play Danilo and Frabotta together because I would have played Alexandro there. I want a specialist who can do that. I'm going to put my faith in this guy, who, by the way, Frabotta hasn't, it's not like he's played particularly well when he's played. He's been an average guy, right? Robbo, can you explain this a little bit more? As a coach, right? When you've got a guy absent, do you replace him with somebody who's plays the position that you need, or do you replace him with somebody who can play the position and is a better player overall, but maybe isn't a specialist? Can you just talk a little bit about that dilemma there?
Well, I think what Pirlo wants is a certain shape, and you just mentioned it there about playing with a back three. And Ancelotti did it at Napoli, what he called 3.5-man defence. So they start as a back four, but they become a back three. So you need a specialist wide player, left back, who can get forward. And that's what Frabotta did. And I thought the shape worked really well for him. Danilo could then tuck in as a third centre-half, and it allowed Frabotta to get forward as he did.
No, but I think the point, though, is that you could have asked Danilo to be the guy getting forward. I mean, he's certainly done that plenty of times in his career, and then still gone 3.5 with a centre back on the right hand side.
You could have played Demiral on the right hand side, but I don't think Demiral was quite as happy playing, because at times you have to be a right back. Danilo had to be a right back last night and he made a couple of mistakes in terms of his positional sense, but he had to be a right back. Demiral, I don't think, is particularly good if he has to go out into wide areas. He's in 1v1 situations, he's too kamikaze and can give fouls away. So I think he went for the specialist left back, left wing back in Frabotta, and I thought that was the right decision for him to make.
I mean, just showing Pirlo some love there.
This was a game where they had, considering all the players missing from Milan, this was a game that Juve had to play to win, had to attack.
You can also be conservative
in your approach to it.
But it's not necessarily conservative. You still have the better players. You still have attacking players you can bring on. You could just say, all right, let me go and I'll win the game through inertia almost because I have better players, you know, and I'll just keep it tight at the back and avoid the risk.
And the other thing you have to remember, Gab, Aaron Ramsey was playing on the left-hand side of that midfield three, you could say. And Aaron Ramsey doesn't stay there. So you need width down that left-hand side. Ronaldo's not going to go and close down the left-hand side or make too many runs out there. He wants to be the centre forward. So you had to have a player that could do the whole length of the field. And Frabotta was the ideal replacement for Alexandro.
All right, you brought up Ronaldo. In fact, let's get to him in a second. I was talking about there were two big refereeing decisions or non-decisions. I think one for each side. So refreshingly, we don't have this annoying code of Nedved going on television and complaining and media attacking each other and referees. But there were two questionable decisions. Yeah. Personally, I was okay with both, but I'm sure you guys could disagree. One is on Milan's goal, Çalhanoğlu gets the ball from Rabiot, possibly fouls him.
definitely fouls him.
There's a whole sequence. There's like five passes and stuff that continues.
Yeah.
And then they score. Now, this is what... Great goal, by the way, from Calabria. Yeah. I didn't think he had
fantastic
that in him.
Shot.
This is a phase of play thing, right, for VAR to intervene. You know, VAR can't intervene on the foul because it's not a red card foul.
Yeah.
But they can call it back if they think it was in the same phase of play. You're going to tell me that it was.
I thought he had a direct impact on the move. But yeah, I can see that it was way before the goal itself. But I don't care.
So the reason it didn't get called back, Robbo, is that referee was right there. Referee saw it. And he told the VAR, I don't think it's a foul. I saw it clearly. I don't think it's a foul. Yeah, my judgment is that this is not a foul. I saw it very clearly. Are you okay with that, Robbo? I mean, would that have been a foul in your playing days?
It would have been a foul because Çalhanoğlu was the wrong side of Rabiot and he gives him a shove. Whether Rabiot was going to lose the ball to Calabria doesn't make any difference. It's a foul by Çalhanoğlu. Whatever era it was a push. He wasn't within playing distance of the ball and the game should have been stopped. Now, once they score the goal, I assumed, and I was commentating on the game, that once he looked at it, VAR would say to him, you need to go and have a look at it. And that's what I think Juventus were upset about, the fact that he didn't go and have a look at it rather than the actual decision.
Which I have to say, I think is fair enough on that front. Although in general, the advice given to VARs in Italy is, if you've seen it clearly, You don't need to go take a look. VAR, if it's a judgment call by the referee, VAR doesn't.
Yeah, which you understand.
You know. The other one, of course, was Bentancur not getting sent off. Again, if you get into the macho blood and thunder context of the game, I can see why he didn't get sent off. But based on the laws of the game,
that's compensation, right? We agree on that.
I don't think it's compensation.
I believe 100% in refereeing compensation. In the sense that at halftime, those referees know exactly that this was controversial, that they could have given a foul on Rabiot and that the goal would not have stood. And in a way, in the second half, maybe not, you don't go back on the pitch in the second half thinking, like, okay, we're going to give one to Juve because it was that one. But I'm sure 100% that it's somewhere in their mind and then there's that side of it as well. And Robbo agrees.
And Robbo said, Robbo, you also think it was a makeup call, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what happened is that the referee probably at halftime looked at it again and thought, maybe I should have given a foul. Yeah. It was a foul. But I don't want to make two bad decisions against Juventus because it was clearly a yellow card. He had to send off Bentancur and he almost didn't want to look back at who it was. He knew it was Bentancur that had made the foul. Right. But he didn't want to look back at it because he didn't want to send him off. And Pirlo got lucky because we were saying in commentary, he's got to take Bentancur off once he got that first yellow card because he's under pressure now for the rest of the game. And they could go down to 10 men because he's a holding midfield player that's going to have to make challenges. So Pirlo got away with that one.
Okay, to be fair to Pirlo, if you're taking Bentancur off, you're looking at, you know, Archer, who the 70 million euro man who plays like Archer, the cartoon character, at least since coming to Juve. But
what was great is on the second Chiesa goal, the camera At least on French television. I don't know if I guess it was the same production for everyone. Just had a, showed Arthur who was warming up, almost like if he was almost if he was like Ronaldo. Let's see Arthur's reaction to the goal. And like, why? Why the guy is completely irrelevant to this game, to Juve, to Pirlo. Why are you showing him that?
I want to move it to oh sorry one more thing on Pirlo. You mentioned the substitutions. I'm not one of those people who judges managers based on substitutions and then the guy scores and whatever. I mean, I think obviously that's part of it, but that is a small part of a manager's job. Whatever people say, oh, so-and-so's rubbish because he put him on instead of the other guy, you know, whatever. But when he sent on Kulusevski and McKennie, it looks to me like, all right, now let's ratchet up the energy further.
Of course, yeah.
And the two of them combined to score the third goal. And I thought, you throw Kulusevski on after Milan have been playing at that pace with him running directly at people. Robbo, that was good. That was pretty good. And you put on McKennie, who's so smart and can go and he can kind of plug all the holes in midfield and also get forward at the right time without unbalancing the team. We got to praise him for that, yeah?
Yeah, you can praise him because it was a slightly strange decision in certain ways because Kulusevski played up front where Dybala was playing and McKennie went to right wing back to start with. And then when he made another change, McKennie went to left wing back where he scored his goal from. And Kulusevski still played up front. And Bernardeschi went out on the right-hand side. So the game lost its shape in the last 10, 15 minutes, which I wouldn't have thought Pirlo wanted. But Kulusevski, when he came on, was dynamic. And I could understand why he put McKennie on, but not in the positions that they were actually playing. But it worked for him. So he was proved right.
All right, let's talk about what was going on up front for Juve because we've talked about Cristiano Ronaldo is more productive or has been more productive when he plays with Morata.
Yeah.
It's not hard to understand why. Morata offers offers more depth to the team, as we say in Italy, because he can run behind the defender, so Cristiano doesn't have to do that. You have another big aerial threat that takes up space, which means more space for Cristiano. When he plays with Dybala, Dybala will drop back so that he can turn and run at people. That's his game. Dybala, I think, didn't have a phenomenal game, but he did that back heel was pretty fun to watch. Can you talk a bit about the dynamic here about Cristiano in this game? Did Milan do well to neutralize Cristiano? Should Juve have done more to get him the ball, or did Cristiano just have a bad game, as sometimes happens?
I didn't say he had a bad game. He just had a quiet game. He wasn't able to get into it. I don't think he links up particularly well with Dybala. Dybala, as you mentioned, often goes quite deep, so it means Ronaldo has to play further forward, and he doesn't always want to do that. He wants to go where he wants to go. There wasn't the combination with Frabotta down the left-hand side that he may get with Alexandro, not because Frabotta didn't play particularly well, but there's not got that understanding. Ramsey was going infield and making forward runs, and it almost bypassed Cristiano Ronaldo. He couldn't link up with anybody yesterday, and a couple of times when he did want to get on the ball, he had it taken off of him. He was moaning at Chiesa because Chiesa didn't pass him the ball a couple of times when he had shots, when Chiesa was absolutely in the right to get shots away. So it was a disappointing performance from Ronaldo, but I'm sure in the next game, I think he does play better with Morata. There's no doubt about that because Morata's a great foil for him.
Yeah, or maybe Diogo Dalot knows a few things through the Portuguese underground that got in his head. No, I'm just kidding. Where does this leave us? I mean, I touched upon it earlier, but I want to hear what you guys think about these two teams going forward. I mean, starting with Milan, when the injured guys return, Robbo, if Pioli were to ring you up and say, "Hey, Stuart, what do I do here?
Tell me."
You know, like Çalhanoğlu, for example, I thought he had a really good game. It's a contract year, as we know. His contract is expiring.
He's playing for it.
Talks coming up soon. Do you generally keep this setup when everybody's fit? Is it, you know, not the back four that played yesterday, but obviously Calabria, Kier, Romagnoli, Theo, and then Bennacer and Kessié in midfield with Çalhanoğlu, Ibra up front, and then Rebic and another guy, whether it's Leao or Castillejo or Hauge or whoever, Brian Diaz or whoever on the other wing. Is this the way forward, basically? Or might you be tempted to tweak it, maybe go with three central midfielders and use Çalhanoğlu in a slightly different way or whatever?
No, I go with what he's been playing with. The system has worked for him. He's just had a bit of bad luck with Ibrahimovic being injured because he was the focal point of most of their attacks. He was the one that linked up the play. He then had Rebic making runs beyond him. He had, as you say, another Calhanoglu was the player of the Serie A in December. I think he was voted before the game. So everything's right for him when he gets those players fit, but they haven't got a good enough squad. Some of those young players, Hauger and Salamakers and Castillo, still aren't to the level, I think, that you need to win Serie A. So that will be the area of concern. But I would stick with the same formation, the same system. It's worked for him for quite some number of months now. And if they can get those players back fit, they've still got a chance of winning Serie A.
Robbo, very Italian there. You win nothing with the kids, yeah? but just, can you press in the same way with Ibra out there? Do you want to press, or do you want to just maybe keep Ibra fresh when he's there?
Yeah, maybe you just count him out of that press, and you just have a medium block instead of a high block in the way you press, and you just your structure is a bit slightly different. And I think you can certainly do that. I think it was a defeat that is not going to hurt them too much, I think, because of all the players missing, because there's circumstances to that defeat after, 27 games, I think it was. And then, as you said at the weekend, Inter play Roma, you could certainly find yourself back to 3 points clear at the top. And then,
I think one of the keys when Ibra returns is, I think the message has to be, Ibra, you're the center forward. You're going to play like Cristiano does. We're not going to give you other responsibilities. We don't want you wandering around the pitch and getting the ball in midfield and getting fouled and whatever. You just finish. We'll create for you. We'll press for you. We'll run for you. And you do that. And that's what he's been doing really this season compared to last season when he was carrying the team.
But this is certainly a much bigger win for Juve in every sense.
Oh, then it is a defeat for me. No question about it. In fact, Matt segues us nicely to Juve. Pirlo's been under criticism. We've talked about the way he wants to play. Robbo, my take is this isn't going to change until Pirlo has a guy who can play make in midfield. I mean, you even put, he doesn't need to be a superstar. You can put Jorginho in there to pass the ball, and they would be better off in terms of doing what Pirlo wants to do. Am I wrong here? And so, and until he finds that player somewhere, which probably won't be this season, they're going to have to find other ways to win.
I think he's caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, because one of the areas that they've been weak, they've been too easy to play through. Now in midfield areas, you've got Rabiot, who's now playing quite well, but he's somebody that wants to run forward with the ball. He's not got great defensive qualities. You've then got Ramsey, who certainly doesn't want to defend and hasn't got any defensive qualities. Although he'll run around, he's not very good when he's in 1v1 situation. So you have to have somebody who can hold. Not particularly a great passer of the ball. I was disappointed with Bentancur yesterday. I don't think he did the job particularly well. He allowed Calhanoglu to dominate the game. I don't think they need an absolute playmaker in midfield to be a better side. I still think if they get the front two working well together, they get the midfield players running with the ball, Ramsey making his forward runs, the wide players doing their job, Chiesa at his very best. The system, there isn't a problem with the system, but he needs to get more out of Morata and Ronaldo as a front two. He needs to get more out of the wide
more
players.
More out of Morata and Ronaldo?
Situations. And he needs
What's wrong? Sorry.
Sure.
Whoa. I'm sorry. I'm going to unleash the trolls on you. Ronaldo scored a bazillion goals this season. Morata's been phenomenal. Are you really suggesting he needs to get more out of Morata and Cristiano?
No, not get more. Sorry, the words get more out. Get them working well together so that's the way to go forward. I don't think they need a really creative midfielder in that holding position, because they had Pjanic last year and he passed the ball fairly well, but they struggled defensively when teams counterattacked them. So I still think that the system is absolutely right. The midfield is absolutely right. You have to have a holding midfield player that can do the defensive side of the game and pass it quite well as well, which Bentancur on his day can do. He didn't do it particularly well last night. But I don't think you need somebody to come in, and certainly not a player like Jorginho who will pass it square and back, because they've got one there, Arthur, who can do that.
Let's not bring up Arthur. I mean, honestly, we'll agree to disagree with Robbo.
The midfield was always going to be the biggest rebuilding job of PLO's first season anyway,
right?
Or first few seasons, right? That was the thing that was not working in the Sarri.
No question.
So it was, I agree with you. I mean, I agree with both of you. I think Bentancur is better than what he showed this season. But man, how long are we going to wait? It's either he's doing well now, or you sell him or you keep him, but he's not a key player anymore.
No, you keep Bentancur. No, you don't. But you, I think that if you want to see the leap forward, if you want to see what he's talking about when he talks about committing people forward and dominating spaces and everything, I think you need somebody there who can pass and who can create. Robbo, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Serie A here. Let's go to the League Cup, because my take is probably at this stage what they should probably do is just abolish the League Cup and just give it to Manchester City.
Okay, yeah.
Just, or even actually, don't abolish it. Just award it to them.
Every year.
Every year.
Okay.
Right? Because what is it then? Three in a row. They're in another final now. I think it's six of the last eight, something stupid like that. Yeah. They're going to play Spurs, of course. We'll get to Spurs later. They played United last night, and I think I was kind of surprised by how much carryover there was from the Chelsea game for City. Obviously, still a lot of people injured. Pretty much the same lineup. Mahrez in there, of course. Fernandinho.
Well, you thought he would have rotated more?
No, not that. No, but it felt as if it was a continuation of that first half. Like, I thought they might have approached it a bit differently because United played differently than the way Chelsea play. But no, they don't care who they play. They just go and...
Yeah, the goal, I thought it was impressive again at times in the game, in the first half especially, even if it was 0-0 at halftime. But some of the movement, some of those transitions, so quick going forward, they certainly have that back for sure. And I was surprised in the way United played. But I think City, even if they scored on two set pieces, the John Stones goal is from a wide free kick and then Fernandinho, second phase of a corner. I think they completely deserved to win that game. I thought they were in control, even if United had some fairly good chances.
The Bruno Fernandes chance early, that I thought Zach Seffen did really well. To put that away. Is that but, a game? Then, would that have changed the game? I mean, would we have had a different outcome at that point, given the way all they set up and everything?
No, because I still don't think that when they're home, United defend particularly well. They defend the lead well. Not that they defended really well, but I just don't think they would have stopped City playing. They would have controlled the rest of the game after that goal had Bruno scored. Once again, what they created came from a Marcus Rashford moment of brilliance individually or from Bruno Fernandes on his own at some point. There was just nothing else collectively, especially when you compare it to City. And my issue in that game is John Stones scores after 50 minutes, straight in the second half. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wastes 25 minutes in a game where you're behind. And this is not a league game where even if you get, you know, a bit more momentum in that second half, you could push. This is a
cup
game.
You should have made changes earlier.
Big time. Just do it straight away. Put Mason Greenwood on. Change something. And then see, if you lose it 2-0, 3-0, it doesn't matter. It's a cup semi-final. You've lost three already since you arrived at United.
Well,
at least do something.
Could it be, and if I give Solskjaer the benefit of the doubt here, I thought he went out there, he played the diamond. And look, I've been saying all along.
Yeah, me too.
Play the diamond.
This is the best
I think it's
formation.
Good. I think they got the right results. I don't think United are comfortable necessarily. For a team that plays so well in transition, because that's one thing that they do well, they're not one of those teams that are comfortable. At the same time, weirdly, they're not comfortable not having the ball and having to defend and going for long stretches, right? They can do the counter, but they can't park the bus. They don't do it well. It's all jittery. And so I thought he's like, okay, we're a goal down. Let me keep faith in what I have and wait for something to happen. Wait for Pogba, Bruno Fernandes, and it didn't come.
Yeah, completely. And again, I think,
is that necessarily the wrong approach rather than, oh, chuck on Greenwood because I'm chasing the game?
But I just think...
Like, I can't fault Solskjaer for that.
But you have to change something. It was clearly not working. They were not, apart from that Bruno Fernandes chance, and again, Rashford's a couple of times with half chances because he took on players on his own, there was not much. And that, I think that's where we need to talk about Bruno Fernandes, in a way, in his creative sense and creative job in that team. Manu Petit on French television at the weekend saying like, okay, he's great. He's been great for United, great impact. But in the big games, what has he done? Chelsea at home, nothing. City at home in the league, nothing. City at home in the League Cup, nothing. Arsenal at home, nothing. There's just, it might come a point where in those big games, and in the Champions League, he scored one against Leipzig, he scored one away in Paris, okay. But they still went out. Do you think he should do more in those big games? And do you think we should judge him a bit more on his performances in those big games?
I'm not one of those people who necessarily makes these distinctions between big games and small games. I think it's something that, you know, we're naturally prone to do, but I don't think is that relevant. I try to look at over the 38 games.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree with you. And he's been amazing for them.
You raise a good point with Bruno Fernandes. As I said, I don't say see it that way. I think there is an issue when you find yourself relying on the individual, like Fernandes and Rashford or Pogba for the time being every time. But
and he looked tired as well. Bruno, he's played so many games and he gives so much, he's got so much energy that I think there's a point where he needs a rest. And the rest will come for the FA Cup because surely he can't be involved whatsoever in that squad for the weekend. That would be good. But I just thought last night he looked tired.
Here's the thing. If you are going to rest Bruno Fernandes, are you better off playing, keeping the same shape, just sticking with a diamond, putting Van de Beek in there, or does he go back to the 4-3? I don't understand why. I don't see why he goes 4-3-3 at this stage. I don't see the benefit. It makes Pogba or 4-2-3-1 or whatever you want to call right? Yeah. It makes Pogba worse. It leads Rashford further away from the goal.
Yeah,
you can put Greenwood or James in, but Greenwood's not a winger. And James isn't particularly good.
Yeah.
By the way, one other thing on James, pet peeve of mine. What is it with this? So many English commentators do this, right? They like putting the adjective young in front of somebody, right? Now, if you're going to do this, right, with, you know, ooh, young Rehan Brewster, fine. But why do we still hear people refer to young Daniel James?
Yeah, what's the
cutting edge? He's nearly 24 now.
Yeah,
I mean, what? It's
21 should be the last time you hear young before a player, right?
Yeah, or if the guy's just arrived, you've never seen him before.
22,
I mean, come on, man.
Okay, if you play completely different teams at the weekend in the FA Cup. I mean, FA Cup is a different.
Yeah, and nobody cares. If you're United.
For me, the team that started last night, you can put Alex Telles at left back instead of Shaw, of course.
Well, and Lindelof. Yeah.
But this is the team that. This is the formation and the team that should start every game home or away.
What about the goalkeeper?
Yeah, okay. With De Gea in goal. Okay. I still put De Gea in goal ahead of Henderson.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw enough of Henderson against... And maybe Henderson is not very good or...
So you're going to disrespect Cavani that way?
No. Because... No. Cavani can play. Cavani can come in, you know, in the front too.
Yeah.
But this is the formation and this is the team with... Okay, maybe Cavani or Martial, De Gea or Henderson, Telles or Shaw, that you should play every game home and away and certainly work on that team... To have a better plan B of, okay, we can have long haul of possession. We can build this game differently than just play quick on transition because Bruno has such great vision, great passing range, because Rashford and Marcel are so quick, because we've got Pogba, because this.
I think he's found his kind of comfort zone with the diamond. The argument against the diamond was always the same. It was width,
yeah.
And then it's like, okay, fine. And then, but if you play the diamond, then what the other team's going to do is say, like, here, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, have the ball, and we'll just all shift to the other side, and then he's going to run with it and lose it, right?
But against Villa, it's a great cross for Martial. It's a great move from him.
He did put it in. I know, but he doesn't do this all the time.
No, but...
But equally... There's just two things to say about this. First of all, Aaron Wan-Bissaka isn't Dani Alves with the ball. Fine. You know what?
Yeah.
Neither was Gary Neville. And if you remember, in fact, it was a famous, I think it was against when United played Milan in 2008, whatever, right? Where you could actually see Ancelotti's Milan saying, okay, you know, you had Neville and Beckham, or maybe Beckham was gone. I don't know. I'm all conflating things a lot. Yeah. But the point was, they would leave Neville time and space on the ball, right?
Yeah.
And he'd look up and he's trundling along And you know what? Gary Neville is a professional footballer. And yeah, he may not be the best on the ball, but he can hit a very good cross if you give him time and space.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Aaron Wan-Bissaka is. You know, I don't need him to be Marcelo on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
So I think you can get around that problem if you're concerned about width on that side.
And Tejas is perfectly able on the left.
On the other side, of course. But you can also send Martial to that side or Rashford to that side. Or Bruno Fernandes. You know, have these guys move around. There is a way to do it. You can play Rashford and Martial wide and have Bruno Fernandes to the middle. Everybody was like, oh, De Bruyne, the false nine. Why can't Bruno Fernandes do what De Bruyne did? When you look at his shooting and when you look at his running from deeper. So there are many solutions if you keep this
diamond base. That's what I want to see from Solskjaer. I was going to say glimpse. It's not glimpse. I want to see proofs that he's got that flexibility tactically in his head.
I think he's got reached those ideas, that point.
That work together and that team will improve. Yeah. That's the only way this team will improve.
I think he's reached that point in terms of the setup. Do they execute well? Not all the time. And that's still where you need to, where I think you need to improve. And one big thing is, as I said, when this team is to defend for long stretches, they fall apart. They can't do, you know, the Juve of old or sometimes some of those Mourinho teams are like, hey, you guys have the ball and we'll just laugh at you as you try to beat it. Because they get nervous, they get jittery, they're not, you know, Maguire's got his issues, Lindelof has his issues. I don't necessarily want McTominay running around trying to, you know, they're better when they're front foot.
Yeah.
But if you're going to play front foot in a diamond, you know, there's still things to work on, but I think they are on the right path.
Yeah,
there has to be more to come.
Talking about defending and defenses.
Oh, you're going to show John Stone some love, aren't you?
I was just, because, I mean, Ruben Dias has been, I think, has been very, very good since joining the club. Similar impact to Virgil van Dijk at Liverpool in the first few weeks, few months that van Dijk arrived.
Let me help you saying, well, he's not Van Dijk. Yeah. But before the Liverpool game, get all over
you. Of course.
You
know? And until he wins as many trophies as Virgil van Dijk did on the long term with that kind of impact, then we can talk. But still, his impact has been great on that defence. I was there at Stamford Bridge, as you know, against Chelsea. He was such a leader. He was so vocal, everything. He was the boss of that defence. And I think John Stones, for all the debate that we've had and people have had in England about the resurrection of John Stones, etc., Ruben Dias is making John Stones a better player. If John Stones was also making mistakes before, it was often because he was playing next to Otamendi, for example. If you play next to Ruben Dias...
But
I'm not sure he played that many times with Laporte. But even with Laporte, I don't think Laporte gives you as much assurances than Ruben Dias. Do you see what I mean?
It could also be. I mean, you hear... I'm only slightly skeptical when people bring up the mental side of the game because... You can use that as an excuse for anything, right? People have a mentality. But I think with Stones, there is something there. Because we saw him before. We know that he's comfortable on the ball. We know he's a good athlete. And we saw him play well. And then for a long stretch, we see him play badly. And he looks like somebody who's just lost his mojo.
Yeah.
That doesn't get switched on, you know, without having gone necessarily had a serious injury to explain it. When you have that situation, unless there's something really wrong with him, you figure you can reclaim him if you put the right players around him, if you build him back up. So he's done really well. I thought it was a bit funny. I was watching last night. Oh, look, he's been spectacular after he scores the goal. I mean, yeah, he scores a goal because he's there and the ball bounces off. I expect any professional footballer would have scored that goal. It's not that. It's the performances leading up to it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what. they need to get one of their other center backs fit in double quick time, because you're playing with fire when you literally only have two guys in central defense, and then you're getting into Fernandinho, Taylor, Harwood, Bellis, or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
You know, Garcia, Ake, Laporte. Those are three big guys. And don't give me the Kyle Walker can play center
I'll
back.
I'll give it to you because he can.
The man has COVID right now, so we don't know what's up with him, right?
Yeah.
So, you want Mendy at center back?
Yeah,
Next to La Cancela? I mean, come on. But but they look good. They're in the title hunt.
Yeah, very much so.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough of that. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Barcelona beat Athletic Bilbao and new boss Marcelino 3-2. But don't be fooled. It could have had twice as many, maybe even three times as many. Jules, this was Barca's best performance of the season. Will we remember this as a turning point, or am I getting a little bit carried away?
I swear you told me that before. Oh, this is a turning point. This was great. And then we got disappointed again. That's what they do, the up and downs. And Messi was great. That's why they were so good.
This is Messi's best game of the season.
Yeah, because Pedri was great, and their relationship is great to watch. It's great to see how blossoming it is. And Pedri, let's not forget, he's only 18 and 43 days.
Yeah, but let's talk about the rest of the team. It's not just about them. I think this is Koeman going out there saying, let's do this. Griezmann involved. Dembele played really well. Come on, no? All right.
Yeah, there was a lot of positive. There was some negatives as well. I guess this is better than a lot of things that they've produced so far this season that we've seen. Okay, show me this more. Show me more consistency like this, and then I'd be happier. Many, many years ago, Barcelona had a superstar named Ronaldinho who nurtured the young Messi on his debut. Gab, is the same happening now with Messi and Pedri?
Yeah, obviously you could tell who writes the questions. He's not on board with this.
No, but it was. You need to emphasize
that. The Ronaldinho to Messi transition was maybe unique, right? Because you had the best player in the world kind of transitioning to the guy who would become the best player in the world. I don't think Pedri's going to become the best player in the world. However, that relationship is very much there. You can see it on the pitch. This guy, Pedri, is really, really special. And he has so much confidence, so much personality. I don't know. It's the kind of thing where the line they're trotting out at the Camp Nou is, Pedri's going to make Messi want to stay.
Yeah. Is Pedri better at 18 than Iniesta was at 18?
Or better than Messi was at 18? No, he's not. But he's certainly better than Iniesta was at 18.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot better than Iniesta. Yeah. No, but we're not comparing him with Iniesta.
No,
we're comparing
him
with Messi. Come on.
Yeah, but
Tottenham Hotspur, of course, are through to the League Cup final after beating Brentford 2-0. Jules, Jose Mourinho is hyped and amped about delivering Spurs their first trophy in 12 years.
Yes.
Done
the
deal,
Cup,
right?
The League Cup is a bit his competition as well. You know, he loves winning here. He's won it.
Yeah.
What, four times already?
Yeah, Man City have won it more, and he's playing Man City in the final.
I know,
it's
against Pep, and that would be a great final, April 25th.
Good storyline.
Something like that. Good storyline. And you know what? Psychologically, winning something, as we've been saying all through the Pochettino years.
You know he's going to milk that forever.
Yeah, but still.
And
that
rightly
could, that could unblock something. If Manchester United get at least a point from their game in hand, they will go top following Liverpool's defeat against Southampton on Monday night. Gab, is 2 points from three games now for Jurgen Klopp. Is it time to worry?
I think the injuries are catching up with him. I think the injuries, the lack of rotations catching up with him. I'm going to crunch some numbers. I might do a piece. It feels to me like, especially obviously since Jota went out, those three guys, Firmino, Salah and Mane, have just been running on fumes.
Yeah, but they played Minamino at Palace and that worked pretty well. So why not do it again?
I think they're just simply, they're leggy, they look tired. Southampton, by the way, shout out to Ralf Hasenhüttl.
Yeah.
You know how much it pains me to go and praise Germanic managers or Teutonic managers, but what he's doing is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's great.
Sticking with Liverpool, Gini Wijnaldum's contract talks are reportedly deadlocked. Jules, do you keep him at any cost or do you let him walk?
So you don't.
No,
you don't, because he's going to turn 30.
Yes.
Like, what do you mean any price? He's not going to ask for the money that Cristiano is on.
But presumably they've offered him a contract and he's asking for more than that, right?
Yeah, but I don't know if it's the length that is a problem, if it's the money that is a problem. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he just wants to leave as well and wants to go to Barcelona.
He doesn't want to just leave. He wants to stay.
What I know is that he's such a key player for this Liverpool side, and he just won't be easy to replace. That's what I'm saying.
As you know, you're paying for what these people will do in the future, not what they've done in the past.
It won't be easy to replace. Inter dominate possession. They missed a penalty early on and then hit the bar on the rebound, but they do little with it, with that possession, and they fall to Sampdoria 2-1. Gab Conte's 8-game winning streak is over.
Yeah, and it was obviously going to end at some point. Look, I think they were pretty naive in this game, but they did have their chances early, and if you don't take their chances.
Yep.
I think my main takeaway here isn't so much that they lost, because that was going to happen at some point, is now, given that it's Inter, given that it's Conte, given it's the ownership and this and that, at the weekend, Roma, if they lose that one, all of a sudden, it's crisis mode and fighting fires and grumpy Conte and Eriksen, who, by the way, came on at the end. I mean, come on.
By the way, can someone sort out the Sampdoria pitch, please? I mean, between the seagulls, the sand that is on it, how bad it is, what's going on?
Hey, well, when you have a pitch that's in between the river and the sea, that's what happens.
But,
you know?
Do something.
Borja Mayoral scores the kind of world that you love to talk about, Jules, and Roma beat Crotone 3-1. Paulo Fonseca could be second in the league come Sunday night.
And Borja with two goals. The first one is tapping. The second one, as you said, lovely strike from 20, 25 yards. Even without Dzeko, who Borja was replacing, they look good.
Being rested for the weekend, Dzeko will be ready.
Impressive. Cristante was great. Mkhitaryan, again, was great. Yeah. What a game this is against Inter the weekend, by the way. Napoli take the lead, but then little Spezia come from behind and beat them 2-1. Gab, Gattuso is furious, saying they're throwing away the title. I mean, only you thought they could win the title. Anyway,
Gattuso does too.
It can't just be the absence of Mertens and our boy Osimhen, right?
No, they're not converting chances. They're creating chances. I'm fine as long as you create chances. That's the main thing. But I think this is a blow. It feels a little fragile. They're still a great team. I think these aren't games that you can afford to lose if you're going to mount a title
challenge.
How
much is that on Gattuso, though? You know, make your team stronger defensively. You in the lead.
Make your team stronger. Spezia,
don't concede two goals. Don't concede two goals.
Mauricio Pochettino makes his debut on the Paris Saint-Germain bench against Saint-Étienne in the Cup. It finished 1-1. My boy, Moise Kean.
Yeah, good goal.
Jules, what'd you make of it?
Listen, he had two proper training sessions. Don't expect amazing stuff, a revolution in just 4 days that he's been in the job and two training sessions. We saw little bits there and there. Marco Verratti playing higher up on the pitch, giving the assist to Moise Kean, by the way. And little things like this, but he needs more time that he doesn't have, to be fair, because they play 12 games in 50 days. But hey, at least they didn't lose it, and he will take that.
Suck it up, man.
Yeah, the FA Cup is back this weekend. But Gab, I know you're not the biggest fan. What will it be like? Derby County reportedly will play their academy team, since Wayne Rooney and the entire first team are out with COVID. Shrewsbury, who play Southampton, have 10 players positive for COVID. Is it still worth playing?
They should have been testing these people, especially these lower division guys. I don't know. I don't know why Derby County are sending their academy team. What, because they don't want to miss a day? I mean, they're playing Chorley, who are a non-league team, so maybe the academy is going to, I don't know, but this is extremely messy, and it's a shame to see the FA Cup in these conditions.
The magic of the FA Cup.
Mesut Ozil's time at Arsenal could finally be coming to an end. Jules, he's being linked to Fenerbahce, as well as DC United in MLS.
Yes. I mean, DC have a DP place, so maybe that could work. Fenerbahce have no money. I don't know where that could come, how they could do it, or how they will pay him.
They can't even make him a shareholder of the team.
Yeah,
because
I think
it's publicly owned.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. But I think he will go this month. I think Arsenal want him to go. He wants to go. He wants to play again.
They don't need money, though, right? Because, I mean, he's made enough money off of Arsenal. He can just kind of follow his heart and go and be the free spirit.
Right, play for free.
Why not?
I would love that. That would be a great story, Meza, if you're listening. That would be a great story.
He's made enough money at this stage. Why not?
Chelsea is super busy this January trying to shift players from Marcos Alonso to Fikayo Tomori. Plus, of course, Lucas Piazon. 9 seasons at Chelsea, if you had forgotten. 7 loans, 3 games for the first team. Wow.
At some point, somebody will write a very long feature story on Lucas Piazon and what
happened. Is he real, even? Have we actually seen him?
He is a real person. I know people who've met him. He was most recently at Rio Ave. His contract expires. There's a suggestion that Chelsea are going to cancel. Why would you cancel your contract? I suppose it's so he can move somewhere else.
Yeah,
I don't know. Part of me still says Chelsea should just say, you know what? Let's extend them just for fun. But about the others, yeah, there's no question. There's a big squad. There's too many players, guys who never play, like Marcos Alonso, who's obviously on Lampard's naughty step. Guys need to shift, but the issue, as ever, is always the same. It's really, really hard to shift people who make too much money, especially in this post-pandemic era. I have a piece up about the 7 principles to follow in the January transfer market. Go check it out.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We had to talk about it. Raymond Dominic, he made his debut for Nantes.
Yeah.
The fans aren't happy. And we don't know so much about the Nantes performance. I guess they drew, but yeah, they're angry with your buddy Valdemar Keita.
Yeah.
And obviously Raymond's winning popularity contest.
They put 300 banners all around the town, all around the city of Nantes yesterday. Not happy, demonstrating, protesting. As you remember, I told you the story of the first training that Dominic took charge of when they put that circus music. I mean, it's just incredible. And I can understand why, because Keita, in a way, has ruined that club. This is such a historical club. This is a club that is so significant in France, that's synonymous of great football, some of the great managers.
Historically, great youth academy.
Yeah,
in the
youth
past
academy,
as well.
Of course, but Reinald Denweggs and Jean-Claude Suodo and all those, and even before them. You know, they brought so much to French football that seeing them now with Raymond Domenech and Keita and all of that is just,
Can you just what makes Keita such a freak show?
I think it's 14 managers in 11 seasons, something like this. It's just instability everywhere. He has no idea, no clue. He's clashed so many times with the fans and especially the ultras for many reasons. We need a whole show, pretty much. But I think Dominic is really the one. This is an insult. If you're a non-fan and you've got aspirations for your team and expectations and ambitions, for him to go and get Raymond Dominic 10 years after his last job as a coach with France, 27 years after his last coach as a club manager with Lyon, you're just like, what are you doing?
I have to say this because, having spent many, many years covering the sport and having met a number of owners, there is a pattern here that follows people who buy football clubs. These are people who are super intelligent. Obviously, they've been super successful. Valdemar Keita didn't inherit all his money. It's not one of those situations, right?
He has surgery, clinics, including penis enlargement.
Does he really?
Yeah.
I think the technical term is male enhancement.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how you call it, but that's what he does.
Has he operated on himself, or does he not need to? We're digressing here.
Yes.
But the point I'm making is you always have this thing where super smart people buy football clubs, and then at first, there's always a pattern. At first, the football men come out like, oh, this is football, okay. So they normally take a step back and allow the football men to run things. Then they realize a lot of it's football men. There's no magic sauce. It's a lot of BS, the football men. It's a lot of nonsense, right? So then they get personally involved and they screw things up.
Yeah.
They screw things up so many times. We've seen this, and he seems cut from that very same
club. Yeah, and they're just hoping that he sells the club, and there's a few projects, including one, like a local one with fans and local industries and things like that. Let's see what happens. But not great at the time. Sergio Ramos and David Alaba are both out of contract this summer. Gab, who is more likely to leave, and who do you think has more to give, and who would they go?
All right, so Alaba is obviously a couple years younger.
More than a couple, no?
He's 28?
Yeah, and Sergio is 34.
Right, but Sergio Ramos is eternal, right?
I know,
he's kind of like the Cristiano of defending. He's a Viking from Andalusia.
Yeah, from Andalusia.
I'll say that I think Ramos is going to extend. I think when Ramos looks at this, he says, all right, either I make my lifestyle choice and I move to a new league, MLS or whatever, I just can't see Ramos moving to another big European club and starting over. I don't see what the appeal is, right?
And like, who, a 34-year-old who wants 15 million a year, who would give him that?
Well, I think that's what he wants from Real Madrid. I think he has to necessarily settle for less, I think, if he moves in the current climate. And, you know, there's a lot of clubs he would obviously make better, right?
I mean,
if you drop Ramos at Manchester United and put him in there in place of Lindelof, then, you know, you're halfway there. But the question is, do you want to do this at this stage? Do you want to leave Real Madrid? Because let's not forget, Real Madrid will fight for the Liga title this season. They can do something in the Champions League. They can do it again next year, because we're all hearing about World Cup backs of Real Madrid, belt tightening, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, but it's happening everywhere, right? Yeah. So I don't know. I think he's gonna stay put. I see no reason why he would leave.
I agree 100%.
But can I also make another guarantee? Yeah. Until he signs, he'll be linked with other clubs, and I'm sure he'll be linked with Paris Saint-Germain next.
Yeah, I think they are already.
Well, I can tell you that
it's not happening.
Yeah, him and Dele Alli, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, dream partnership. Alaba is more interesting.
Yeah, I was exactly going to say it's interesting.
I'm a huge David Alaba fan. I love his versatility. Yeah. I love his intelligence. I don't think he's having a great season this year, but then again, neither are the club defensively.
Nope. Yep.
And also, I think he actually is unsettled by Pini Zahavi, the club negotiation. They're kind of hanging out to dry. You know, once Bayern locked down and they get, you know, the house organ built to go and say, oh, look, you know, greedy agent, greedy David Alaba, blah, blah, blah. That's the end. The whole climate kind of turns on you. It comes down to numbers or whatever, but I think you can get a solid 5 years out of David 100%. Alaba. And whether it's center back, whether it's left back, whether it's midfield, you like him, don't you?
I love him. And I think all the top clubs should be after him. And I think that's why he's in such a strong position compared to Sergio Ramos and Real Madrid. Alaba is like, okay, it's a huge loss from Bayern if I leave, and I can make any teams in Europe better. And a lot of those big teams on a free transfer, although a free transfer that is not free, as we know, because you have
to give Pini money and whatever.
And signing on fees and et cetera, and obviously big wages. But still, it's better than not having to pay 50 million for someone who is easily worth 50 million in a normal contract context. I think it's a no-brainer for anyone. If you're PSG, Chelsea, Manchester United, Manchester City, Real Madrid, Barcelona, and if you have that money, go for him. 100%.
Yeah, and I want to make one last point about free transfers. You're right. Free transfers aren't free.
Never free.
But I'm going to relate something which an executive at a big European club told me. They'd been talking to the agent of a player who's out of contract soon and who they bought a few years ago. And you know what the agent said?
No.
And this is the mindset, right, with free transfers.
Yeah.
The agent said, a couple years ago, you bought this player, player X, from club Y. Now, if you want this player, you have to buy him from me. Okay? This is the mentality with free transfers. We have to, these are not free agents. These are people who, agents get paid to deliver players to the clubs, and you have to effectively pay these agents a transfer fee for the free agent. And you know what? It's the players who allow this to happen.
And what?
This is one of the biggest conflicts of interest out there. I have no issue with agents. I don't think there should be a cap on agents' commissions. If Mino Raiola wants to negotiate something where it's $100 million for him, it's fine.
Yeah.
You get everybody agree. But you, player, have to take some responsibility here to know that this is going on, and you have to be transparent about it as a club.
That's the irony, is that they're called free agents, those players.
Yeah, anything
as
but
in free agents. And also there's agent in their names. As in, like you said, they're still very much dependent on what the agent wants to do and how much money he wants for them to actually be properly free.
Not to mention, when you sign these guys, they end up screwing up your whole salary structure, right? Because they end up making so much more money.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes players like to force moves in unusual ways. Jules, what's the Didier Lamkelze approach?
This is a great story. He plays for Antwerp in Belgium. They're doing quite well, both in the league and in Europe as well. But he wants to move to Panathinaikos.
As you do.
Except that right now there's just no agreement. So he's trying to force a move. So to force a move and to show how unhappy he was with Antwerp, he turned up at the training ground the other day with his Anderlecht shirt. And if you don't know, Antwerp and Anderlecht are huge rivals. They hate each other. So, of course, at the club, they went mad. They closed the door literally in his face. So he couldn't come in. You can see him trying to pull the door in.
Like, yeah, it was amazing.
He has apologized since. It's clearly not a way to behave. Antwerp is, you know, they're paying him. They're still paying him. I know he wants to leave, but they're still paying him. You can't treat people like that. So I don't know what's going to happen. He might get his wish in the end and move, but this looks stupid.
God bless the January transfer window.
Come on, man. David Beckham's Inter Miami are looking for a new manager, Gab. And according to Mark Ogden, he's reached out to his old teammate Phil Neville. Do you understand this one? Does it make sense?
Some people make this almost too easy to parody, right? We're talking worldwide search, whatever, and then he calls up his old teammate. Phil Neville is a football manager with the England women's national team. Women's football Twitter in the UK was pretty mocking of this.
Yeah.
But my guess is they're probably reaching out. I want to give Beckham the benefit of the doubt. They're reaching out to a ton of different people. Yeah. They're searching a bunch of different people. It just so happens, Phil Neville is the story that got out.
And got out, yeah.
You know, possibly because it's in everybody's interest to have Phil Neville's story go out. But I'd be slightly disappointed if this is the person that they thought was the man to launch Inter Miami in the new millennium. Right, this is all we've got time for today. Thanks so much. I'm Gab, he's Jules. You know, should we come back? Do this again on Monday,
because
some games this weekend we might want to keep an eye on.
Definitely.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.